start your engines!
Bring them up, gang. Bring them up.
Here we go. History in the making.
Green, green, green.
The checkered flag flies. Hi, this is Brett McMillan. You're listening to the special edition of The Pit Reporters. We're joined by some of our favorite pit reporters on this episode.
Welcome to The Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network. And now, here's your host, Brett McMillan.
Hey, welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us. This will be the checkered flag edition of The Pit Reporters, our final episode after 26 years. And glad to have Doug Rice here as we start things off. Doug, this was your idea 26 years ago, and I appreciate you tapping me to host this show.
I am honored to be here. Not glad to be here under these circumstances, but yeah, we cooked up this show 26 years ago, a quarter of a century ago, and I remember going to our then sales manager, a guy named Dan Farrell, and saying, got this idea for a show. We'll get somebody to host it, and each week they'll come in and talk to two media people. And he bought into it. They went out, they sold it, and you were the host. You have been the only host, which is even more remarkable, Brett. 26 years for anything is a long run. 26 years with the same host, that's pretty incredible.
Well, I appreciate it, and it has been an absolute blast. I was thinking back, you and I were talking. I think our first Pit Reporters were David Poole, then of the Charlotte Observer, right, and Ralph Shaheen.
Yeah, the late David Poole, one of the more curmudgeon-y people you could ever meet, but a brilliant writer. And Ralph Shaheen, very successful broadcaster, now publisher with Speed Sport News, and entrepreneur. That's not a bad way to kick it off, Brett. That was not a bad first show.
David Poole has always had a lot of great things to say, but one thing he has said always sticks with me. He goes, in all the years I've traveled, I've learned one thing. There's 100 different ways to turn on a shower.
And David was absolutely right. And I think about that every time. And he also, his other thing was, why do they call it a retaining wall? All walls, by their very nature, retain something.
Yeah, you can use that in football, too, you know. Yeah. It was a touchdown-saving tackle. Well, aren't all tackles touchdown-saving tackles?
That, and it depends on the spot. When does it not depend on the spot? It always depends on the spot.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I was looking back. This show started the week after the 2000 Daytona 500. You look back, and I looked at the roster of the guy. 43 cars ran that day. And, of course, there's not a single gentleman, and they were all gentlemen, mm-hmm, who was in that field who even runs part-time in the sport today. 43 cars started that day, but here's how things have changed. 56 cars tried to qualify, yep, and one additional car withdrew, and that was driven by David Green, who was now a NASCAR official.
It is funny. I think in that time frame, what'd you say, 2000?
2000, Daytona 500. Dale Jarrett won that race.
That was probably the high water mark of NASCAR. That's when the TV ratings were just out the roof. If you held a NASCAR race, you didn't have to advertise it. It sold out. And it's never gotten back to there. It may have been artificially popular at that time, but the early 2000s, the late 90s were absolutely the benchmark by NASCAR being measured by it.
I mean, you think about it. That was prior to, and that was a year before Fox,
right,
came on board, because the next year was the year that Fox televised their first race, and the race where Dale Earnhardt passed away. And it's interesting now, 25 years later, people still think about what would Dale Earnhardt have thought about this?
I don't know. That's a really poignant question. How good of a 70-year-old would Dale Earnhardt have been? We don't know. These are all questions we can never answer. And the sport has endured. It's endured the loss of heroes through them passing and then retiring and not being a part of it anymore. And my biggest single worry right now about NASCAR racing, and this is not what you asked me, can we get more heroes? Can we get more people that transcend the game that Joe Sixpack can look at and go, yeah, that's my guy. That's who I want to win. I think that's the big struggle. You had that with the Earnhardts and the Tony Stewarts and the Dale Earnhardt Juniors, and I'm not saying anything bad about the current crop of drivers, but that's, to me, the number one challenge this sport has.
Well, I think as you talk about that, and we talk about how the sport's changed over the 26-year run of this show, we haven't had the great personalities
No.
that we had. I mean, people were critical of Jimmy Johnson, and this, you know, this show premiered before Jimmy Johnson was running in the Cup Series, before he won his 7 championships. Jimmy Johnson, one of the nicest guys you'd ever come across. Just a super guy. We all like Jimmy Johnson. But everybody, the criticism of Jimmy Johnson was he was too corporate. But this is also a guy who got hurt surfing on a golf cart.
But I think some of that criticism's merited. Jimmy Johnson's very low-key. He's California cool. He's not the guy that the good old boy in the duck blind's going to get excited about pulling for. And I respect Jimmy Johnson above just about anybody that's ever gotten in a car. But he was not the big personality type. I don't know who the last one was. Maybe when Junior was racing, he wasn't the big personality.
No.
He was kind of shy, looked at his shoes a lot, kind of mumbled. Now he's huge. He's bigger than anything. Maybe Tony Stewart.
Yeah.
Because Tony spoke from the hip and backed it up and won races.
Yeah. And I don't think we have, like you said, I don't think there is a big personality in the sport right now.
Not that can stand in the shadow of somebody like a Tony Stewart or a Jeff Gordon. There's just not. Or you know, go back in time to an Earnhardt. That doesn't exist. That's TBD. That's to be determined.
Well, and you have guys who, you know, who do television appearances and things like that. I think Ryan Blaney is a likable guy who's very photogenic, mm-hmm. who does these appearances, but I don't know that Ryan Blaney is a big personality. I tell you, the guy that probably does more fan outreach than anybody else who has tried to be, you know, kind of cross that line and be a great personality is Joey Logano. You think about how many weeks he appears on a Sirius for an hour and takes calls, and he's a 3-time champion.
Yeah.
No, he gets it. People still don't like him.
He gets it. He really does. What do you think, Brad? Let me turn the table here. 26 years of doing this show, longer in the racing game. What's the biggest change that you've seen in this time, overall in the whole sport?
You know, it's funny because I sit there and think about the way the sport's covered. I think, the way the media center looks now and the how it's covered, how it's digested more than anything else, because the fact is, you know, hey, we think about you talk about David Poole was one of the first from the Charlotte Observer. There are no newspapers covering this sport anymore. There are no newspapers.
No.
Who publishes newspapers anymore? At least not on a daily basis.
The art of writing the recap is gone, because by the time you get that to print, and I've already read it 17 times on my phone. I know who won. I've seen the cuts. I've seen the highlights. So, yes, you go into media centers now where it used to be newspaper reporters smoking Winstons, and it's a bunch of 25-year-old vloggers, people writing video blogs and doing that. But that's the nature of media in general.
But I think that's changed the way the sport, maybe the sport's covered, maybe the way the fans react, because you think about it, it used to have those water cooler moments, so to speak, where something would happen, and then you had time to digest it. You had time to hear people react to it. You know, maybe post-race said, well, here's what I saw, here's what I thought. And then you could talk about it the next day. Well, now there is no wait till the next day. Now, I saw it, here's what I think, and this is why this guy's wrong. You know, there's immediate reaction now. And I think, to me, as I immediately answer your question, that could be the biggest change I've seen in this sport is there's the immediate reaction and no time for anybody to stop and digest anything.
No, it's instantaneous, and it happens in the moment, and it happens almost before they even get out of the car. And that's a huge change. I mean, it's a lot of change. I'll still go back to what I said earlier. For me, it's been the lack of somebody to carry the flag for the sport right now. There's some really good drivers. Denny Hamlin's made a lot of noise. Almost won a title, won a big lawsuit. He's the most prominent. He's probably right now the most well-known driver we have in the sport. And even over Kyle Busch and people that have won titles just because of the news cycle of the moment.
Yeah, it is. And you think about it now, you know, how many iterations of the car have we gone through this time? And, you know, think about what the schedule looked like in 2000 and how predictable it was that you could book your travel.
Yep.
You know, 365 days in advance, and what the schedule looks like now, and how many, you know, two road courses versus five in the coming schedule, and who even thought about running on street courses?
And how many tracks had two races then that don't? I mean, if you had a race, you probably had two. There weren't many places we only went once. Michigan had two. Pocono had two. All of these places had two races. And now, if they still exist, they're lucky to have one.
Yeah, there are not that many tracks that have two races. When you really get down and think about it, you know, in a place like Charlotte, which has two, but the tracks are different.
Yeah.
Because one's the Roval, one's the Oval.
What do you have? Two Darlingtons, two Talladegas, two Daytonas.
Two Atlantas.
Yep.
Two Las Vegas. Two Kansas.
Still two Richmonds?
No, one Richmond. Two Kansas.
Two Martinsvilles.
Two Martinsvilles.
Not many.
No.
It used to be if you had a race, you had a second race.
Yeah, two Bristols.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's amazing how much the sport has changed as you think back and look at it. I look back to the Xfinity race in 2000. Kevin Harvick was in that race. And that is the closest to a current driver I could find that ran that weekend.
And that guy became famous the next year by winning down at Atlanta.
Yeah.
In the 29 car for Richard Childress. Brad, I just want to thank you for giving so many people voice on this show. You have pulled out a lot of people, some of them very, very well-known, big-time media celebrities, and some not so much. But you did it with grace and a style that it never brought anything to PRN and to the audience that wasn't excellent.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your confidence in it and putting me in this seat 26 years ago. And being the support behind me.
Thanks a lot.
You never told me I couldn't talk about anything.
No, I was afforded that opportunity by the Smith family and Humpy Wheeler and Marcus and Bruton. They never once brought me in and said, you can talk about this, this, and this, but don't talk about this. Some things I just knew better to talk about.
Well,
yeah.
I think I knew the same thing too, but I appreciate your support. And stay with us here on the show. We got some other folks coming by. We'll talk about how things have changed over the last 26 years that the Pit Reporters have been on the air. Doug, appreciate your time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This isn't just race day. It's one big Texas-sized weekend. Big time action on the track. Big sounds from the stage. Big flavors that only Austin can deliver. And big memories with your crew. At Circuit of the Americas, NASCAR goes all out, all weekend. Don't just watch the action, get right in the middle of it. NASCAR at COTA, February 27th through March 1st. Get tickets at NASCARatCOTA.com.
Doug Rice is your host for Fast Talk every week on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
This is the kind of racing you can feel in your chest. Door to door, inches apart, every lap all on the line. This is Echo Park Speedway, the hottest track in NASCAR. 3 days of tailgates, camping, and full throttle fun. But Sunday is chaos, speed, and glory. This February 22nd, the Auto Trader 400 takes over Atlanta. Get tickets at EchoParkSpeedway.com.
In addition to traditional summer camp, Victory Junction also hosts family weekends, partner programs, and day camps. And the Victory Junction Outreach Program takes camp fun beyond our gates to children at hospitals and partner sites throughout North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. Victory Junction makes the impossible accessible.
This is a place that needs to be here 50 years from now, 100 years from now. We are never going to run out of kids that can benefit from Victory Junction.
Discover how you can get involved at victoryjunction.org.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
And welcome back, joined by Adam Alexander from the CW and Doug Turnbull from PRN and the Five to Go podcast. Appreciate you guys taking the time to be with us. As we look back, since this show started in 2000, the first show was the week after the 2000 Daytona 500. How much has this sport changed? What do you think the biggest changes have been, Adam, over this 26-year period?
Well, I would say the depth of competition one is something that I would point to. And you look, and I just think and reflect on our most recent season in 2025 and the number of drivers that you felt like on a given week had a real chance to go out and win. I don't think we always said that in the early 2000s. So that's one thing that has changed to me. And then I would say, too, you know, the technology. And you just look at how the race cars have evolved, how the teams have evolved, strategy and the role that it plays in these races. And so for me, and to me, that is a catalyst for why we see the depth of competition, because there's a lot of different paths to victory lane on a Sunday. So those are a couple of things off the top of my head that I would throw out there that I see is major changes when you reflect over the last 25 years.
Even as you think, talk about that. I'm even thinking about even officiating. You know, how much, you know, where you used to have guys, you know, at every pit stall, NASCAR officials, and now it's, you know, there's no arguing a call now because NASCAR's got people in a truck looking at it.
That's right. Well, and safety too, right? Because you think about what's transpired from 2000 to now and how a crash looked then and what the result of that crash may be versus now some of the things that we see that happen. And drivers just walk away. And even, you know, you talk about, you know, pit road. We had officials on pit road and they were just there and they're, you know, they're button up and no helmet and whatever. And now you see everyone that's in and around pit road in fire suits and helmets. And as crazy as it sounds, it wasn't always that way. And so we've made some great strides in relation to strategy in the last 25 years.
Doug, as you think back over 26 years, what do you see as the biggest changes?
Well, for 2000, the year this show debuted was the last year that I was kind of oblivious to the sport, didn't know about it. I started really following from the 2001 Daytona 500 and all the tragedy and drama there with Dale Earnhardt and Michael Waltrip and all of that. To me, when you look back, and any time when we look back into our past, and certainly when you guys look back, I was in high school then, into your high school years, there's a certain quaintness and a nostalgia and positivity you associate with it that is just, I think, natural over time. But I think back too that we had cable back then and we had the internet, but the internet was a cute tool on the side, and how much the travel of information and the travel of opinion was then. Think how important back in those times, if you missed the race on the radio or missed it on TV, it was tough to find highlights. You had to wait for a show to show it to you instead of finding that on YouTube. Think about before social media, we were glued to Jayski to get all the rumors. There were a lot more rumors posted back then, and now people could just take the story straight to the masses. So from the media side, it's changed. And then on the technology side, you couldn't have said any better than Adam did about it. The year 2000 was the year that we lost. I think it was three NASCAR drivers and one ARCA driver between the beginning of 2000 and the middle of 2001, including Dale Earnhardt, of course, and Adam Petty, and on and on. And so that changed. And on pit road, another technology thing that changed is look at the size of the pit boxes. Go watch a 2001 or 2000 race on YouTube. The size of the pit boxes versus now, I know that's nothing compared to safety, but you've got many hotels on pit road or what you want to call them versus just some rudimentary toolboxes that two people could sit on back then.
I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, and think about the tools and everything else. And, you know, even now to this day, could you have ever imagined 26 years ago, Doug, single lugs?
Yeah. Okay. I was hoping one day that I could be the guy that invented the lug that, or rather the gun that had five cylinders on it and you could change them all at once until NASCAR banned it. That's what I was waiting for one of these teams to roll out. Instead, they just made one lug way easier, right? But yeah, no kidding. So to your point, Brett and Adam, y'all have been pit reporters way longer, see way more pit stops than me. What was a fast pit stop in 2000 when you had five lug nuts? Like 16, 17 seconds, 15?
I would 14, say, yeah. 13, 14. I mean, 14 was the number that came to me for some reason. Yep.
Yeah.
And then with the single lug, now we're talking 9 flat. I think the fastest time of the year, maybe even breached the 9-second mark of the Cup Series. I know we're still five lugs in the other two series, but if you had said in 2000 without any context, hey, one day they'll be doing sub 9-second pit stops, what would you guys have said? I know I would have fainted.
I remember the gas man saying, I don't ever want them waiting on me.
Right.
And you know, now they're not even filling up the car because they're done a long time before the car's full.
Well, and that speaks to what I was talking about and the role that strategy plays now, because It's not how quick can we get on and off pit road. It's how can we spend as little time on pit road throughout the day as we need to. And we know at the end of the day, it's going to take this many gallons of fuel, not in a pit stop, but over the course of the day, we need this many gallons of fuel to go in the car. So let's manage it that way and spend as little time as we can on pit road in each individual pit stop. So the thought process has totally changed. And that has been a contributing factor, as I said, at opening up the level of competition and how deep you go in the field and potential winners.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, Doug. Road courses, we used to run backwards. You know, yeah. But now it's a lot of tracks we now run backwards, where, to Adam's point, how many gallons do we need to get to the end and maybe a little overtime? That was only the case for road courses.
Yeah, back when Sonoma – before it was called Infineon, it was called Sears Point. Yeah, back then.
Yeah,
and there was only two of those bad boys a year, right? Yeah. And both of them were in the summer, and the schedule was the same almost every year. Yeah, and by the way, we're talking about over 26 years, but a lot of these changes we've mentioned, not the size of pit boxes, have happened in the last 5 years, in the last 3 years, with the COVID radically changing the schedule, COVID shutdown changing the schedule, and then the Gen 7 car. Those two things right there, it turned strategy, pit stops, and the schedule inside out. And then too, with this technology, and now, of course, in the last few years, AI, and then having the war rooms at the shops with all the data and technology, the satellite data as well, that used to be called SMT, that everybody is so optimized that even the 30th place car is only a little bit off of the top. And so, and that too just makes the strategy and so things so much more different, where you used to have guys getting 6 and 7 laps down and only 10 and 12 cars on the lead lap.
Doug, Adam, appreciate your time. Appreciate your thoughts. Always enjoy having you guys here.
Congratulations. It's been an unbelievable ride. Congratulations to you, and appreciate the many phone calls to come over and be a part of the show.
Always enjoyed having you both. Appreciate it. We'll be right back.
When it comes to maintaining your engine to run at peak performance, trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant. Z-Max soaks into metal, so it's easy to add to your oil or gas to disperse carbon buildup in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. Protect your vehicle's engine to the max with Z-Max. Check us out at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter to find out more about our full line of products. Remember the name, Z-Max, for your car, big rig, small engines, firearms, and more. That's Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
Catch Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown with Charlie and Debbie here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Let's climb in the cockpit.
Drag him up.
Pull those belts tight one more time. Grab the wheel and hold on as we prepare to take the green flag on a new year in the NASCAR universe.
The next chapter of American stock car auto racing is being etched as we speak, with new twists and turns.
White flag in the air for Denny Hamlin as he tries to call his shot to the championship round.
With near misses and fender bending crashes.
Fire just seemed like it built way faster and yeah, I could hardly see.
All paired with the thrill of victory.
I never in a million years thought that I'd be getting my first Bristol win on a tire fiasco.
And the agony of defeat.
Yeah, obviously really wanted that one. You can only ask for shots.
We will be your daily dose of NASCAR's top stories.
And the latest from the garage.
Yeah, we want to win races and contend for championships.
And giving you our opinions and hot takes on the current state of the sport. Tune in weekdays for more of PRN's Garage Pass.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Now joined by Pete Pistone from SiriusXM NASCAR Radio and Chris Leitch from CatchFence.com. Both guys, appreciate you guys taking some time to join us and look back at how NASCAR has changed over the last 60 years. Earlier, we were looking at the starting lineup for the Daytona 500, which preceded our first Pit Reporters show. And I was just looking at, there was nobody in that field who is still running in NASCAR. And I got out of curiosity. I thought, well, maybe somebody in, I guess it was the Busch series then, was starting. And nope, nobody is still running. Though I do see that your buddy Elton Sawyer, who you have on your show all the time, Pete, finished 30th in that race. So, yeah, nobody in the Busch series was even running, is still running in NASCAR.
26 years ago.
26 years ago. That's how much has changed. But, Pete, did you think back to where we were in 2000 and where this sport has come? I mean, obviously the television package has changed. The car, how many iterations of the car have we been through in that time? What's the biggest thing that jumps out to you how this sport has changed over that period of time?
Well, I was going to say the television package, because I think, as most everybody knows, prior to 2001, when NASCAR bundled everything up, the tracks went out, sold their own radio and television rights or television rights, and that's why you had races on 6, 7, sometimes 8 channels a year. Putting it on a mainstream network like Fox for the first half of the year, then NBC, really, I feel like, changed the whole dynamic of the sport. All of a sudden, NASCAR was a mainstream sport. All of a sudden, NASCAR was in the conversation with the NFL and baseball and the other stick and ball sports out there. And you saw the numbers rise. You saw the attendance rise. You saw sponsorship rise. But like everything else, it's cyclical. And then it comes down a little bit. And then it kind of goes back up. But I think TV and putting this sport sort of center stage and in the conversation, as it should be, as a mainstream sport, was probably the biggest thing. And I guess the second part of it would be, when you look back at what you just looked at, Brett, the racetracks that we went to then versus where we go now, I think the variety has also been a really big change in NASCAR, for the better, in my opinion. We still have traditional tracks, but we have new tracks that came online, and NASCAR now, with this out-of-the-box thinking, well, we're doing street circuit racing in Chicago. We're going to Mexico City. We're going to go to San Diego next year. We built a racetrack inside the LA Coliseum. It's a lot different. I think it's a lot better, and trying to kind of find a kind of happy medium to keeping the core fan happy with the traditional tracks, but going to new markets, I think that's another huge change in the last 25, 26 years.
I mean, it used to be, Chris, that you'd be able to, you know, take your NASCAR schedule, and as you were leaving a hotel, you could say, okay, I'll make my reservation for next year now, yeah, because I know exactly when I'll be back.
Yeah. That, I mean, Pete definitely has some good thoughts. For me, mine focuses on safety. I think that we've come a long way as a sport with safety since 2000. Unfortunately, we lost several drivers, and one in particular that obviously Dale Earnhardt Sr. But I am proud to see the lengths that NASCAR has gone to, along with the teams being influenced and helping and assisting in that, and making these cars safer across the board for our drivers to compete so they can put on a good show for our fans. You look at some of the wrecks that we've had since 2000, a couple that bring, you know, mine, Michael McDowell at Texas Motor Speedway, Carl Edwards at Talladega Super Speedway, Michael McDowell, Watkins Glen, Ryan Newman, Daytona. The list goes on and on and on. So many drivers that we thought the worst, and unfortunately, or fortunately, thanks to the safety of these race cars, they were able to walk a race and compete the next day or the next week in competition. So I applaud that we continue to work towards making safety the top priority in NASCAR. It's great to have these tracks, and it's great to have these TV packages, but if we can't keep the driver safe, then we wouldn't be here every week.
Yeah, and to Chris's point, Pete, that's also not only in the cars and in the tracks, but in the way NASCAR now approaches the point system, whatever the new system's going to be, but in that they now allow drivers, for medical reasons, to skip a race and yet still be eligible for the championship. You know, we think back, we weren't that far away in 2000 from Ricky Rudd taping his eyes open and things like that, because drivers couldn't afford to miss a race and still be eligible for the championship.
Yeah, so smart. I mean, and you know, we've seen the photos and the videos of drivers with broken legs getting in the car just to start it to get the points and all those kinds of things, Brett, that you said. So, yes, and I think Chris makes an excellent point. You know, the sport will never be completely safe. It'll never be completely safe, but it's a much safer sport today than it was. And, you know, we get told all the time, safety is not a destination, it's a journey. And unfortunately, when you see an accident, even in today's NASCAR, yes, happily, the driver usually gets out of it, and that's good, but you also learn a little bit more to try to make that race car even safer for the next time out. So that has been a huge development in the last quarter of a century here in 25 years.
And it goes beyond the cars. You know, safer barriers. You know, I wish those were around even before then, because just to see the impact that the safer barriers have made for these competitors is just amazing. And I think it goes beyond the cars, and what the tracks have been able to do with the safer barriers is commendable as well.
How much of the personalities of the drivers change, Pete?
Well, I think, in all honesty, maybe they're not quite as charismatic as the other drivers were, and there's a variety of reasons for that. I think a lot of it is, you know, byproduct of having corporate sponsorship is that corporate sponsors want their drivers to kind of behave a little bit more, maybe not be as flamboyant and be as colorful as some of the drivers we saw back then. Now, that said, I do think there are drivers today that do have personality. I think they show it. And I think part of what they're being able to show it, or why, is another part of what's changed, and that's the technology of the world, social media, digital devices, being able to go beyond just your traditional television, radio, or print interviews and show people your personality by going in, whether it be hosting your own podcast like we have drivers do today, or having a social media account, a YouTube channel, whatever. They're able to show it, but it is different because, again, when corporate America recognized this sport and are pouring millions and millions of dollars into it, there is a responsibility to that. So I do think that has changed from maybe where we were maybe around the turn of the 2000s and late, certainly the late 1990s for sure.
I agree with what Pete said, but I like to think that every once in a while they forget that they're represented by corporate sponsors and we see another side of those drivers come out. You know, so I like that part of it. But yeah, it's definitely changed. Some of it good, some of it bad, but it's just the way of the times, right? It'll continue to evolve even 26 years down the road.
Kind of looking your crystal ball, Pete, where do you see this sport going over the next 5 years or so?
Well, I mean, I think, again, the sport will continue to grow, I think. I mean, you know, the media rights deal is a big part of this, and we're going to see how that changes. Streaming, obviously, is a big component of where the sport's going to be in terms of putting, you know, eyeballs in front of the sport. I also think that when we talk about manufacturers coming in, I mean, that's a good thing. When you have a Ram come in and there's rumors that Honda's going to come in, and that shows me there's health here in the sport, that people see a value of being part of the NASCAR landscape. So I think that the sport, in my opinion, will continue to grow. I think one of the things, though, that will be interesting, because it feels like what I said earlier about going to different venues and all that, that's still there. But there also does seem sort of this drive to kind of return to its roots and go to some of the traditional tracks as well. Rockingham coming back and North Wilkesboro coming back. And I never thought I'd see a cup race of any kind at Bowman Gray Stadium and those kinds of things. So I'll be interested to see sort of, again, how the sport threads the needle between those two and what the schedule in 2030 looks like compared to the one we're going to have in 2026. I think it could change that much in 4 or 5 years' time.
I don't disagree, but I think it's great that we're combining some of the old with some of the new, right? And so you're giving the best of both worlds to the fans, that the traditional fans and the old school fans that were so accustomed to seeing tracks like North Wilkesboro, Rockingham on the schedule. And now we're going, obviously, to street course, and we're going to go race in San Diego on a naval base. How cool is that in 2026? So we're able to do so much. And I think not only has technology has allowed that, but just being able to have an open mind about being able to do things that aren't traditional, or and being realistic about, okay, we can go do this. I think us going and racing on the Chicago street course opened up a lot of doors about what we'll see in the future for this sport.
Well, Pete, Chris, always appreciate your time. Always enjoyed having you guys on the show, and appreciate your time today. And we'll be right back.
In addition to traditional summer camp, Victory Junction also hosts family weekends, partner programs, and day camps. And the Victory Junction Outreach Program takes camp fun beyond our gates to children at hospitals and partner sites throughout North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. Victory Junction makes the impossible accessible.
This is a place that needs to be here 50 years from now, 100 years from now. We are never going to run out of kids that can benefit from Victory Junction.
Discover how you can get involved at victoryjunction.org.
Lenny Baticki brings you PRN at the Track every week here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network. Need a break? A break from the grind? The stress? We have just the place. A place where you can let your inner thrill billy out. Bristol Motor Speedway, April 10th through the 12th for the NASCAR Food City 500 Triple Header Weekend. 3 days, three races, two night races, one epic weekend. Don't just take a break, race to it. Get your tickets, upgrades, and more now at bristolmotorspeedway.com. It's not just a race.
It's Bristol, baby!
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver.
and I dedicate a lot of my time going fast. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Happy to be joined by Jamie Little from Fox Sports and Tom Jensen from the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And as we look back over 26 years since the Pit Reporter show started, just kind of curious, and Tom, you were at Winston Cup scene at the time, so that's one big change. But how has the sport, in your view, really changed and developed over that 26-year period?
Oh, everything has changed. The cars are different. The tracks are different. The people are different. The one thing that's remained a constant is the competitive spirit that drives the great race teams and the great drivers. But, you know, you wouldn't recognize some of the tracks back in the day. And I mean, I remember 26 years ago, my hair was brown and my stomach was flat. And it's been a lot of changes. And truthfully, more good than bad. You know, it's the nature of some folks, I guess, to be unhappy or complain. But this sport has delivered an awful lot of amazing moments. And I've been so blessed and so fortunate to be able to be there for so many of them. And now to be in a role where I can recount history at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. This sport has been wonderful for me and for my family.
Yeah, Jamie, I looked back and this show debuted the week after the 2000 Daytona 500, and I'm looking back, not a single driver in that race is still racing in NASCAR today. And it's amazing. Dale Jarrett won that race. Jeff Burton was second, then Bill Elliott, Rusty Wallace, Mark Martin, Bobby Labonte, Terry Labonte. Six of those seven guys are in the Hall of Fame, and Jeff Burton's a finalist for the Hall of Fame. I mean, you start looking down through this, and boy, there's some flashbacks in here. Let's see, who was Dale Earnhardt Jr. was in that race. Scott Pruitt was in that race. I mean, you start looking down this. Jeff Gordon did not have a good day that day. He finished 34th, right behind Mike Bliss. Darrell Waltrip was in that race. Wally Dalleback Jr. was in that race. I mean, it's amazing when you think back, and you know, okay, 26 years. As you get older, that seems like it's not that long. But you think about the fact that, think about Jimmy Johnson, five championships, wasn't even driving in the Cup Series at that time. As you look back and think about that and how much this sport has changed, to Tom's point, what kind of stands out to you?
Yeah, this was my 19th season covering NASCAR. So my first year was 2007. I mean, back in 2000, I was covering Supercross. I was just beginning my journey as a journalist and a reporter and just getting involved with TV. And I mean, once I started covering Supercross, I immediately realized I've got to get to auto racing. I've got to get to four wheels. And I started covering IndyCar in 04, came over to NASCAR. It was my goal to get there before I turned 30. And I made that happen, or ESPN made that happen for me. And, you know, it did change my life. And NASCAR has been incredible to me. And I absolutely love it. Obviously, all these years later, you know, there's a lot of people that come and go in this sport at all levels. And to be here this long is such an honor, to be in the level that I'm in, that I get to do play-by-play, something that we haven't seen any other woman do in NASCAR on television, is something I'll hold on to for the rest of my life. And that's others giving me an opportunity in a sport that I love so much. And yes, to Tom's point, so much has changed. I mean, we don't wear fire suits anymore. Hallelujah. That's a big one. And of course, the cars, the playoff system, the drivers, the weekends. I mean, we used to cover practice after qualifying and then another practice. We were there for 3 days just covering Cup Series racing. Then you add in Xfinity and trucks. I mean, so much has changed to help make people's lives a little bit better. But I feel like we still need some more breaks in there. Going 28 straight weeks for those Cup people is just It's incredible. I don't know how you hold that kind of focus to get to the championship round and to still have that fire in your belly. It's a lot of work.
Well, and that was a 43 car field, Tom, and we don't have those anymore.
No.
And that, I think that's one of the changes too. And as I'm listening to Jamie, I think about how many different iterations of the Cup car we've had in that time, including the great winged car that Kyle Busch won the first race in and then talked about what a horrible car it was.
That's right. That's right. And to your point about change, I'll go back to 1999, just a few months before this show started. We're at Homestead, and NASCAR announced for the first time a unified TV deal that prior to 2001, every track negotiated their own TV deal. So you never knew where the race was going to be on any given week, and it always changed. And I'll never forget, I was standing on the back wall of the Homestead Media Center next to Bill France Jr., and he had a bag of sunflower seeds, and he's chewing on them and spitting the shells on the floor. And the press conference finished, and I turned to him and I said, "Congratulations, Mr. France. This is awesome. I want to say it was $280 million over 6 years, something like that." And he looked at me and went, "Pff," and spit a sunflower seed on the ground. And he said, "50 years from now, this will seem like peanuts."
Wow. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. As you look at, you know, even since you talked about, Jamie, since you've talked, you know, since you've gotten into the sport, I'm listening to you talk about all the practice changes and everything else. A lot of that, I think, you know, has changed since the time you've been in the sport. But think about how much of that changed just because of COVID.
Right. We learned so much from COVID. I mean, and you go back to it, not just practice, but the testing schedules these guys used to have back in 2000 and, you know, beyond. It's so different, and it's so much harder for these rookie drivers now to not have the experience and just to get in and be expected to be up to speed and expect that, you know, that time in the simulator or iRacing is going to prepare you to compete at this level. It's incredible what these young kids can do now with so little time getting ready and getting prepared. Also, another thing that has been really cool in all of these years being part of it is watching those drivers, some of which you named right there that were in that race in 2000, who have become broadcasters. I mean, I've worked with Rusty Wallace and Jeff Gordon and Kevin Harvick and, you know, Clint Bowyer and Dale Jarrett. The list goes on and on. Watching them go from race car drivers to broadcasters is really one of those joys for me, to hear them and to share their knowledge and insight with all of us and all of you watching.
Well, Tom, you're with the Hall of Fame now. And as you look at the current crop of drivers, I mean, we know that there are some shoe-ins. I mean, Denny Hamlin, 60 wins, he's going in. Joey Logano, Kyle Busch, now, you know, multi-time champions. You know, now Kyle Larson. Who else do you see, even looking in, beyond that in the future, the young crop coming up, do you see other future Hall of Famers there?
Well, we certainly have to mention Kevin Harvick in that group,
yeah,
because he'll be eligible in 2027, and I'm sure he'll be a first ballot. A Hall of Fame career, in most cases, is built on a lifetime body of work. And you have to, with rare instances, which usually are unfortunately when somebody's career ends early, you know, a Davey Allison or an Alan Kowicki, we don't know what they could have done had they been able to stick around. But most guys, you really have to wait to see their careers unfold. But you see some people. Justin Allgaier, I think, is somebody who's a candidate, a future Hall of Fame candidate, for the consistent excellence and championship performance, you know, he's shown in what's now the O'Reilly Auto Parts series. And I'm going to still stumble over that. Although I'm really glad I don't have to say fast as O'Reilly Auto Parts series.
Maybe think, you do.
Oh, no. Bite your tongue, Jamie. I think Chase Elliott is somebody who has a good chance. Ryan Blaney. I mean, you know, those guys are champions already. And we don't know who else is going to come up. You know, does a Ross Chastain eventually elevate to that level or a guy like that. And that's part of the fun of covering the sport, is seeing these people develop and grow. You know, when I first interviewed Jeff Gordon, he was 19 years old and had just won a Silver Crown race at USAC race at Phoenix.
He had a horrible mustache.
Had a horrible mustache and won this race. And he was this little squeaky voiced kid. And if you would have said, would this guy ever become as huge a superstar as he was, I would have never dreamed that in a million years. But I was there and got to see it, which was really cool. And so Jamie will be able to see people. She's talked about people coming up in ARCA that she's watched, like Jesse Little, and see how they advance. And that's a really fun part about working in this sport.
Yeah, get your thoughts real quick, Jamie, because you've talked about Jesse Love and you've seen him in the ARCA, and then you got to watch Corey Heim in the Truck Series this year, just set all kind of records. And we've seen Connor Zillis, who everybody seems to feel like is a future star.
Yes, I love the future. I think that it looks very bright. I mean, you look at the development series, Chevy is getting really heavily involved with their program. Toyota has had theirs for how many years? How many drivers has Toyota's development program influenced that are racing? Jesse Love came through that program. Well, they get to a certain point and there's no seat for them, so they go elsewhere to another team or manufacturer. And I think that's a big coup for the rest of the field, because they have these drivers that come in, they've been media trained, they know how to eat, they know how to train, they know how to put in hard work, and they know how to drive and get the most out of their vehicle. And we've seen that. Brent Cruz is coming up. Gio Ruggiero is coming up. We haven't even mentioned Corey Heim. He's absolutely incredible, and I have no doubt it's only going to be a couple of years before we see Corey Heim in victory lane, because that guy is just, he's one in a million. That's what I feel best about looking to the future of this sport, is these youngsters and what they're doing and how talented they are. They're going to give people reasons to watch NASCAR for years and years and years to come.
Well, I appreciate both of you taking the time and your memories and your thoughts, and we'll be back with more right after this.
When it comes to maintaining your engine to run at peak performance, trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant. Z-Max soaks into metal and is so easy to add to your oil or gas to disperse carbon buildup in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. Protect your vehicle's engine to the max with Z-Max. Check us out at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and X to find out more about our full line of products. Remember the name Z-Max for your car, big rig, small engines, firearms, and more. That's Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hi, this is Doug Rice of PRN. Join me every Monday night for another great episode of Fast Talk.
I watched the race on TV and they wanted to give him the mantle of greatest of all time, and he's won four races in a row. And so I can't do that yet. But I do think what we're watching is a guy who's changing the sport. He's changing the way the other drivers approach road racing. He's making them study. He's making them up their game.
That's Fast Talk right here on the Performance Racing Network.
Local radio brings people together like never before.
It's a beautiful hometown weekend out there. We've got
your local stations keep you informed and involved with music, talk shows, and real-time news updates you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters, connecting you to what matters most. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress to support your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Well, we're joined now by Jeff Hammond and John Roberts. And boy, I tell you, you guys both remember what it was like back in 2000 when we premiered this show. And Jeff, I'll get your thoughts. I think you were probably still in the box there back in coming off that 2000 Daytona 500. As you look back on the time gap, the 26 years since then, what are the biggest changes you've seen in the sport?
Oh, wow. Where do you start? I mean, from race cars to pit stops to drivers, I mean, you name it. I mean, it's just a continual change of faces and the look of the race cars, the way they're, I mean, let's face it. You know, one time, you know, we were still painting race cars. Now this all decals and they've got different numbers in different places. Those are just some of the little things that pop out in my head. But more importantly, the fans themselves, there was still a lot of Richard Petty fans, Dale Earnhardt fans, and even Darrell Walter fans. I mean, this, you think about all the folks that were still driving and who was basically in the pipeline at that time. You and I were talking before the break. The only one that people probably would recognize today is now announcing races, and that's Kevin Harvick. And he was running the Busch series at that time. So a lot of ground covered, a lot of young talent that came through that wound up being champions. And what we're looking at now, that of the champions that are looking to step up to the next level to be champions. So gosh, this show has been nothing but a showcase of talent and changes as far as rules and regulations.
Jeff's depressing me, JR, because I'm thinking back this now. I'm going, well, let's see. Zilich is 18, so he was still 8 years from being born. But I'm also thinking something you're heavily involved in now is the fan experience pre-race, and that is something that's hugely evolved over the 26 years.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Brett. And before we go on, I'm going to depress you, I think, a little bit more. I think, you know, back when you look at the late 90s and the 2000s, and like anything that evolves, you lose a little bit of the romance. You lose a little bit of the going down to Daytona on a wing and a prayer with a car that you and some people put together trying to make the Daytona 500. And we actually cared about second day qualifying. And there would be 10 cars that would be going home. And there was our drama and our romance about that. But as the sport grew beyond that, you want to see your sport grow. You want to see it be more profitable for the people that are in it. And one of the things, Brett, that really came to my mind because I was there when we started doing those race day shows, at the racetrack, and you started seeing those crowds behind the stage, it really showed you what race fans were all about. You know, you see 2,000 or 3,000 people behind you when you're doing a little TV show. If you don't get fired up about that, you're either A, in the wrong business, or B, don't have a pulse. But NASCAR, and I do still believe there's a lot of this, NASCAR is still the only place where you don't tailgate for 2 hours, you tailgate for 2 days. And you can still put a blue tarp over the back of a pickup truck and call it a camper.
Well, and Jeff, I'm thinking about, you know, as John was talking about, you know, gosh, you didn't used to, when I first started covering the sport, and this is well before 2000, you used to qualify 3 days.
Oh yeah.
And oh, yeah. Now that, you know, there's been a lot of negative talk about the lack of practice now. And we know that was a cost savings device, but there is very little practice now, and it works against the younger drivers. Is that something now that has been as you look at it from both sides, the cost savings versus the lack of practice, you know, the lack of time now that it's taking younger drivers maybe longer to get used to this series?
It has been a challenge, but I'll say it like this. Back then, if you didn't have practice, you never got better. Today, they have all these simulations, and they put you in a vehicle, much like they put, you know, a guy who flies a commercial jet to learn how to fly, and or somebody who's in a fighter jet for the military, and they learn how to do it that way. So you don't worry about losing a $1 million piece of equipment. So we do a lot of that. These guys have rhythm, and they've made this simulation stuff matter. And that's one of the biggest keys, I think, is that it does save money, but then it costs money. You know, you learn how to adapt when you would rather be out there running on the racetrack. So it's all about what you are building and what you're developing. And a lot like in the technology, the first show that you did, it didn't have no cameras involved, you know? So, I mean, it was all on the radio, and it was very important because that's where a lot of race fans going to and from work listen to shows, you know, like the Pit Reporters. So all of these things and all the people have contributed to this show have built credibility as well as interest, because you got a style that everybody has learned to like and information that they find to be likable and credible.
And John, as we look at where this sport has gone, I mean, you and I spent a lot of time in the media center. It used to be filled with beat writers from newspapers, and there are none anymore. It is now filled with people from .coms, which you didn't have 26 years ago.
Yeah, Brett, and I think that's something that is, when we saw it, it was, that was one of the things that when you and I worked at local TV stations, NASCAR was really important to us. When that traveling circus came to our town, we treated it like a Super Bowl. And I remember Roger Penske said that when they asked him to help with the Detroit Super Bowl, he said, "I'd be glad to, because in NASCAR, basically, when we come into a town, it's like the Super Bowl. It's our whole group. It's our whole league, what we do." And I think when people started cutting back on those things, when the Speedway Media Tour went away, when the local affiliates stopped showing up at the racetrack, when the beat riders went away, people were using that as a corporate cost-cutting tool. But I don't think you can underestimate or understate whatsoever what that really did to the sport in terms of popularity. Now, I understand that there's a bean counter with a calculator saying we can or cannot do this. And it's difficult to travel people to these racetracks. It's expensive. But man, when you lost that connection, when you lost your local guys talking about it, I thought that was a big change for the negative part of it. I would like to see that come back. I think it could potentially. But that interest, man, you know, it's the water cooler talk. It's what people are talking about the next day. If you can do everything you possibly can to get people talking about it, you're going to prosper. And I say it, and I say it probably too often, but this is just not the witness protection program. We're in automobile racing to get noticed.
JR, Jeff, appreciate your time. Always enjoyed having you guys on the show, and we'll be right back.
This is the kind of racing you can feel in your chest. Door to door, inches apart, every lap all on the line. This is Echo Park Speedway, the hottest track in NASCAR. 3 days of tailgates, camping, and full throttle fun. But Sunday is chaos, speed, and glory. This February 22nd, the Auto Trader 400 takes over Atlanta. Get tickets at EchoParkSpeedway.com.
Doug Rice is your host for Fast Talk every week on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, it's Charlie and Debbie, along with NASCAR legend Kyle Petty, inviting you to join us for Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown.
Each week, we'll put it in reverse and take a trip down memory lane, looking back at that week's top 20 country songs from years past.
We'll dive into what made those songs and artists move the needle, what pop culture trends made those years unique.
And you'll get to hear me tell stories only I can tell.
So don't miss Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown right here each week.
Welcome to PRN's At the Track. I'm Lenny Baticki. We are PRN's half-hour weekly show dedicated to the short track, dirt track, legends, and kart racing across the Southeast. We provide our audience with the news and insightful conversations with the newsmakers from grassroots racing.
How did that help you this time to take this victory from a grassroots perspective?
I definitely felt like Martinsville was a lot harder than the other one.
That's PRN's At the Track.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Instead of a white flag lap today, I'm going to be taking a checkered flag lap as we bring the 26-year run of the Pit Reporters to a close. The show is Doug Rice's idea at a time that interest in NASCAR was on the rise, and I really appreciate the confidence he had to give me the opportunity to host it. Harold Hamrick's been the man at the controls the entire run of the show. My gratitude to him cannot be understated. And for the last handful of years, David Stiles has been here each week working on the video stream and the graphics, among the other crucial items. And thanks to the Speedway Motorsports leadership, never in the 26 years of this show have we been told that we can't talk about something. We appreciate all the affiliates who've shown enough confidence in us over the years to allow us to have an hour of their valuable airtime each week, and to SiriusXM for carrying the show the last few years. And finally, to all of our friends from the NASCAR media who've joined us over the years. The show has always been about you, your insights, and your opinions. You always brought your best and helped make the show entertaining and informative. 26 years is a great run in the broadcast world. Not many shows get that kind of runway. And while none of us want to see the show come to an end, when we look back, it certainly is something we can all be proud of.